Second case of the day, Beer Capital versus Guinness Bass. Mr. Gimble.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. My name is Franklin Gimble, and I am here today representing the plaintiff appellant, Beer Capital Distributing Company. I would like to reserve 5 minutes, if I might, for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Surely.
The question in this case is whether or not Judge Adelman moved from being a decider of the law to stepping into the jury box and became a decider of the facts. I suggest to this Court that when you look at the history of this case and find that the major force of the initial pleadings in this case, God bless you,
thank you,
was predicated on an alleged violation of the Wisconsin Fair Dealership Law, and then look at Judge Adelman's decision that summarily disposes of the case and all four causes enunciated in the amended complaint, you will reach the conclusion, I hope, from an advocate's point of view, that Judge Adelman really didn't give individual, specific, and careful attention to the differences between the causes of action which asserted an entitlement based on the concept of promissory estoppel and the premise that was based on unjust enrichment. There is no question but that Beer Capital Distributing Company enhanced the presence of all the Guinness brands in its marketplace, which was a part of Milwaukee County north of Oklahoma Avenue in Waukesha County, taking sales which were at the level of $262,000 in 1992 when it acquired distribution rights to $3.3 million in the year 2000 when it was terminated as a distributor. I would suggest to this Court that you have said on numerous occasions that the trial judge, in viewing a matter on summary judgment, should and must consider the fact from a point of view that is favorable to the non-moving party, in this case the plaintiff, who was opposing summary judgment, and look at that fact situation from the point of view of his or her or its point of view of the fact. In particular, what Judge Adelman didn't do when addressing the question of promissory estoppel is he didn't process the specific sworn testimony of Mr. Joseph Madrigrano Sr., which is found in his deposition on pages 36 through pages 37, lines 14 through page line 11 of page 37, where he says repeatedly that he understood that he was promised the distribution rights for Beer Capital of the Guinness brand in now the seven counties of southeastern Wisconsin, a substantial expansion of the territory that had been acquired by Beer Capital in 1982.
What did he submit was the promise made to him?
He submitted that the promise was that Beer Capital would be able to acquire five other distributors' territories within the seven-county territory and be the single Guinness distributor in the whole of southeastern Wisconsin.
Was that Billingsley that made the promise?
Well, Billingsley certainly represented that Beer Capital was his choice, but there is reference to a conversation with Mr. Gay, who was the vice president of Guinness, a meeting that occurred with Mr. Gay in Milwaukee prior to the termination letter, and in specific, Mr. Madrigrano testified that as an outgrowth of that meeting, he understood that a choice had been made. The choice was Beer Capital to be the distributor of Guinness brands in this seven-county territory.
What is the exact content of this statement that you're referring to?
The question that was asked is, were you present at any meeting at which anybody from Guinness told Beer Capital that Guinness had selected Beer Capital? Answer, yes. They told me about some of the stops they had made. They have a form that they had, they've been filling out. That is why it all came up, to do this, to do that, to do that, and we just went along with it. I thought we were the distributor 6 months ago, because I had been in this business that long and made money that long until they got involved in telling us what to do because of what they would give us. That's why we're here. Question, did Mr. Wills or Mr. Billingsley or Mr. Gay flat out tell you we've chosen Beer Capital? In those words, no. Question, but they told you some variation of that. Answer, told us what to do. question, which led you to believe you had been selected, or Beer Capital had been selected? Answer, yes, sir. And they went to the other wholesaler just as a matter of courtesy. So those are the specific conversations with Mr. Gay, Mr. Billingsley, and Mr. Wells that Mr. Mondragano interpreted as a commitment by Guinness towards the fact that they had made a selection. Now, if Judge Adelman sits as a fact finder and says, well, I'm not persuaded by that, I think that he trespasses into territory that doesn't belong to him as the trial judge viewing the matter in the context of summary judgment.
Excuse me, but even if he's not weighing the facts, what in those statements that you related, taking them in a light most favorable to your client, shows that there was a promise made?
Well, I think that, Judge, that it is the behavior of the parties that permitted Mr. Mondragano to accept what was said to him in those meetings, and in that meeting with Mr. Gay in particular, as a promise. And I think you have to look beyond words, and I think we're entitled to look beyond words in terms of whether or not we have a factual basis for at least the trier of fact to look at when there are competing points of view. Mr. Gay's point of view, I never made a promise. Mr. Mondragano's point of view, yes, he made a promise. We had there had been a commitment to the deal. And that's what this court has said in the case of Miller, which was a civil rights case in which the trial court dismissed the claim of a person who claimed to have been beat up by a state trooper and couldn't identify the person who allegedly beat him up. This court, in reversing that finding of summary judgment, said that wasn't critical, that is an issue that the jury would have to resolve. This court again spoke essentially to the same thing in the case of Major Matt versus Monsanto, and talked about what a reasonable person sitting in the position of the plaintiff could have assumed. And I'm suggesting here that if you look at the behavior of the relationship between Guinness and Beer Capital, you'll see that over a period of 8 years, Beer Capital essentially worked hand in glove with the regional person from Guinness, even to the extent that just a few weeks before the termination letter in April of 2000, they were out working St. Patrick's Day in the saloons in Milwaukee, going as a group, the sales manager of Beer Capital, the regional manager of Guinness, with a Beer Capital truck painted in the Guinness logo, going from Irish tavern to Irish tavern, trying to really maximize the flavor of the day. And I suggest that they did, because their sales were extraordinary. And if you look in the record to the recommendation of Beer Capital as the appropriate representative to be selected for the seven-county territory, you find Mr. Billingsley gives really an account of all of the substantial commitments that Beer Capital had made to make the Guinness brand work in Milwaukee County.
Would it be fair to say, recognizing that there had been a successful eight-year relationship, and obviously a profitable one, I assume, to both sides?
Correct.
Would it be fair to look at this as if, on whatever critical statements we can focus on, or Judge Adelman should have focused on, if he did, that we have, in effect, a regional manager saying you're the leading candidate? I mean, would that be a fair read on deciding whether or not that should be a jury question versus a call by a trial judge that is insufficient to go to jury? Because that's kind of what it looks like to me at this point. And I'm not saying how that falls, obviously.
No, I understand. I think that's a single factor. I think that what Mr. Gay said on behalf of the brewery was more critical to the determination that's relevant in this case, not what Mr. Billingsley said. And I think that when Mr. Gay said to Mr. Mondragano, do you know that to move forward here, you're going to have to write a check to these other five distributors that may be in an amount of 2 to 9 times their last net profit, and Mondragano says, I understand that and I'm willing to proceed on that basis, he reasonably at that point in time could have, and I suggest should have, inferred that was the predicate to being the selected choice.
It certainly would be a reasonable read, it seems to me, that Guinness is thinking about eventually cementing such a relationship, to say, do you realize
you know, what your costs are going to be. But you think it gets it close enough to be reliant?
I do. I really do.
Is that, now, would you take it together with that perspective I had, or do you think just the gay exchange is the most critical?
No, I would say you have to take it together. You have to take it together with the whole pattern of the 8-year behavior. And I think that if you look at one little slice that's additional to that, look at what happened when they delivered the kiss-off letter. They sign an indemnification agreement with the new choice, Beechwood, a Budweiser distributor, who's got roots in the East in Brooklyn and Boston, where Daddy's got Budweiser distributorships. He's got inroads into, it's Sheehan dealing with the Irish Guinness, and here's Madrigano dealing with the Midwestern Guinness, and it was patched up out East, and Madrigano gets thrown out with the water. But I think that's a jury question, not Judge Adelman's question, to decide whether or not the promise was breached, or at least there was a setting for promissory estoppel to come into play. And I'd like to reserve. Okay, now, thank you very much.
Mr. Levitt.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Levitt.
May it please the court. This case is really a case about recycling. What they're attempting to do here is to recycle their now failed Wisconsin Fair Dealership and breach of contract claims, which they have determined not to appeal the dismissal to this court. They've attempted to recycle these to establish an entitlement under promissory estoppel and unjust enrichment. I think it's important to keep in mind a few facts that led up to the summary judgment motion. The amended complaint, which is the complaint that was before Judge Adelman when he granted our motion, alleged on the contract claim that they had a contract of indefinite term to distribute Guinness's products in Milwaukee and Waukesha County, provided that they met certain sales goals and objectives and other requirements. Their promissory estoppel claim was an exact mirror image of the breach of contract claim. When we moved for summary judgment, we pointed out that you cannot have a promissory estoppel claim based on the same claim being reflected in a contract. So then what do we have? When they submit their papers in opposition, they suddenly transmogrify their promissory estoppel claim into another promise. And that's the promise that the court was just discussing with Mr. Gimbel. The sad fact for Beer Capital is there is not a shred of evidence, no matter how carefully you search the record, of any promise. What we have here was Beer Capital investing in a chance to become the super distributor for Guinness Bass products in the 7-county southeastern Wisconsin area. And as they knew, there were other rivals to get the job. There was Beechwood, who was ultimately successful, and then there was a third firm that was a conglomeration of some of these smaller distributors.
Did Guinness have any other representatives meet with the representatives of the other companies who were vying for this contract?
Yes, I mean, this was
Did they have a conversation similar to those that they had with the Beer Capital to tell them that I believe that you're going to get this contract?
Well, I think that in fairness, in terms of the record, Judge Coffey, I think it's undisputed that Mr. Billingsley did tell representatives of Beer Capital that they were his choice, but that he would recommend them to people at corporate in Stamford, Connecticut, that he didn't have the decision. So obviously that wouldn't have been said more than once, assuming he's not
He said that he did not have the decision.
Right, that it had to go to corporate.
Yeah, but did Stamford. He say that I thought that you would
right.
that you would get it?
No, he didn't say I would get it. He said, I will recommend you as my choice, but the decision is that of others in Connecticut at corporate. They did meet, yes, with the other two vying distributors and interviewed them over time as well, and ultimately came to a decision to appoint Beechwood. Wisconsin, which is not unusual, follows an objective theory of what needs to be manifested to constitute a promise, and that's reflected in the Major Matt case that Mr. Gimbel alluded to that was decided by this court, one that actually I was involved in. And there is not any evidence at all of a promise that any reasonable juror could believe existed, designating, committing Guinness to appoint Beer Capital. All that we have is the following: Beer Capital's subjective belief that they were the leading candidate, Mr. Billingsley's uncontested statement that he would recommend them to corporate, and lastly, Mr. Gay's statement that if they were going to get appointed, they would have to be willing to pay 2 to 9 times earnings to buy out the other distributors. I submit to you that Judge Adelman was right on the money when he dismissed this promissory estoppel claim. Even if he had found, which he didn't, and quite correctly didn't find, that there was no promise, the promise would have been too vague in any event to be able to support a promissory estoppel claim. It would be indefinite as to term, and mind you, the underlying contract case is already gone, and that contract was indefinite as to term and could be terminated at will and was terminated. And likewise, as we pointed out in the Wausau Medical Center Asplen case, a contract that's terminal at will in Wisconsin will not support a promissory estoppel claim and can be terminated at any time. So for all those reasons, the district court correctly dismissed the promissory estoppel claim.
You don't share Mr. Gimbel's suggestion we look to family law in this, Mr. Levin?
No, I don't think so. It is true that she and family and the Mondragano family are both very active in the beer business, but beyond that, I would say there's probably not too much from family law that one can learn that would be helpful here. Although having said that, and turning briefly to the unjust enrichment claim, which is their final effort to establish some kind of entitlement to something, having lost on their two seemingly best claims, and I must say that had they been successful on the dealership claim, that might have gotten them the kind of loss will damages that they're now saying they're entitled to under unjust enrichment. The law is quite clear, and I get to get back to your point, Judge Flom, about family law. There is a family law case that we...
It's Mr. Gimbel's. I don't know that I've adopted it.
No, no. But, you know, saying, should we look to family law? We do cite a family law case from Wisconsin called the Watts case, which is helpful on, you know, what is required for unjust enrichment. And the reality is, where you have an at-will relationship such as here, either party is free to terminate it at any time without any further cost. And the decisions of this court make plain, for example, the Abrams case and the Murray versus App case, and more recently the Beanstalk AM General case, that when a contractual relationship is validly terminated without fault, that there's no further responsibility under the law of restitution, unjust enrichment, whatever you want to dress it up as. Unless the court has any questions of me, I would respectfully urge, on the basis of the grounds set forth in our brief, as well as on the basis of the points I've made here this morning, that Judge Adelman's grant of summary judgment dismissing the amended complaint in its entirety should be affirmed in all respects.
Thank you, Mr. Levin.
Thank you.
Mr. Gimbel.
I have great respect for Mr. Levin as an advocate. However, when he urges that you look at the promissory estoppel and unjust enrichment claims as some form of recycling, I am somewhat offended, and I think it fits with the nature of the brief that they submitted in this case, and I think it's rather flippant. When this case was designed, it was designed with the notion that there exists the potential for alternative causes of action because of the uncertainty of a dealership relationship that has been defined and redefined and redefined by this court and by the Wisconsin courts in hundreds of cases. And if I were today to be repleting this case, I probably wouldn't have pled the dealership case, because I think Judge Adelman's decision on the dealership case is sound. And I think that Judge Adelman's decision on the breach of contract case is sound. And I acquiesce in the reasonableness of those decisions. Nonetheless, I think that his decision is unsound when it comes to the other two causes pled in this case, and I don't think that he should be given the right to sweep under the carpet two legitimate standalone causes of action, as he did in his decision on summary judgment, with very little discussion about the basis for doing so. And so the recycling notion, I think, is something that I would hope that you wouldn't adopt. And I think that with respect to the difference between the breach of contract claim and the promissory estoppel claim, there is clearly a difference between maintaining the status quo, which was the predicate of the breach of contract claim, that is to continue to be the distributor, exclusive distributor, in the north part of Milwaukee County and Waukesha County, and to be the distributor in seven counties in southeastern Wisconsin and take over the turf of five independent separate dealerships. And I don't think Judge Adelman discusses that, and I don't think he recognizes that difference, and I think that that's a substantial predicate for the establishment of a promissory estoppel claim, because there was a promise made, in our view of the fact, that I think permits at least a jury to find that Mr. Matagrano was right, that the words and the deeds of Guinness in their 8-year behavior, and in particular in the last 6 months of their behavior when they had the so-called beauty contest going on, would support Mr. Madrigrano's view that a promise had been made for Beer Capital to be the seven-county distributor.
Well, wouldn't you think if a beauty contest was going on, Mr. Gimble, and all parties were aware of it, that all sides would look to a little more specificity? I mean, if there hadn't been the beauty contest, so to speak, and it's just a Beer Capital and Guinness situation, a standalone. Not that a third party might not come into play. That's part of the picture too. In other words, that Madrigano is aware of the other interests. It isn't just that he's got an 8-year relationship. As I say, it's a standalone.
Retrospectively, every case could be made stronger if you start with the notion of what happens to you at the end of the line.
But I'm thinking in the context of this. In other words, wouldn't the very statements you rely on to advance your position have a greater weight if it wasn't for the beauty contest? I guess I'm wondering I'm trying to see where Judge Adelman might have been coming from on what whatever weight he gave to those things.
And I think your question alone suggests that maybe Judge Adelman didn't have a full understanding about the ability to tie together active behavior and words. And I suggested in my answer to you before, Chief Judge Blum, and I reiterate now, that it is my view that if you couple the conversations that happen between the relevant authorized officials of Guinness to the Beer Capital officials, that you will have to place an order that is substantial, that you will have to change your computer system to give us the kind of record keeping that we demand and require, that you will have to hire specialized employees who will be able to shepherd our brand, that in light of those kinds of very specific demands, and because of the compliance with those demands by Beer Capital, combining that continuing dialogue with the word, now you've got to write a check to somebody. Are you willing to do that? Yes, I am. We've got a deal. That's the essence of it.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Levitt. The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will proceed.